Okay. Actually, I'm not here. At least I wasn't supposed to be here. I made it pretty clear to everybody that I would be back the first Monday after Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan. This is not the first Monday after Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan, unless you look from last Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan a year ago. What happened was, I don't fight with my daughter. And she said a little bit stronger to me. I had my wife call her just to make sure that I wasn't supposed to be here today. And she said, what are you talking about? We put it in the tidbits that everything is normal. So I was going to call a few people here and find out if they plan to be here, because I was sure that I said that I would not be here. And then I decided that that my daughter would have a hard time looking for somebody else to replace me at the last minute, and it was more important for me to make my daughter happy and lose a little extra sleep. So I'm here. Obviously, a lot of people felt that I wasn't going to be here, so they're not here. Or some people thought I wasn't going to be here, and that's why they are here. I'm not sure exactly why. One of the two. I'm not sure exactly which one it is. Okay, with all of that said, next week we will start the next Mishnah of Pirkei Avos. We're not going to do that today because a good portion of the regular attendees are not here. So I wouldn't want to start a new Mishnah just like this. What I'm going to do today is speak to you about some of the ideas that I mentioned in my Kehillah over Sukkos. And even though they have to do with Sukkos, but they really have to do with life in general. And I think it's an interesting thing to hear. And if there's time even to speak about something from the last week's Sedra Bereishis also. But first I want to start with the ideas that I mentioned on Sukkos. And again, they are not just early for next Sukkos, but they have really real relevance to everyday life, and in more ways than one. Okay. First of all, an idea. This is not really part of the continuum that I'm going to speak about, but just an interesting idea that the question is asked, we have a holiday to commemorate the sukkahs that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us in the desert, the clouds of glory, or the regular sukkahs, but God gave us other things in the desert. He gave us man. He gave us a be'er, right? He gave us the, why don't we have a holiday to celebrate them? There are many, many answers to that question. But I was thinking of an interesting idea, and that's the following. There are four occasions that demand of a person that he thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And under those four occasions, we bench gomel. Okay? Dalet tzrichim lahodos. Four people in the time of the Beis HaMikdash had to bring a korban todah, a thanksgiving offering. We bench gomel. What are those four occasions? Somebody who was in prison and got out. I guarantee you that Gilad Shalit had a bench gomel. Okay. Somebody who crossed the desert. Somebody who crossed an ocean. Somebody who was deathly ill and recovered. Those four are the occasions that create that's deathly ill. Okay. So now, if you think about it, the four Yomim Tovim that we have, and I'll tell you why it's four, represent these four things. Pesach, we got out of prison. We were slaves in Egypt. We were released by getting out of prison. So there was a yontif to thank the Rabbanu Shalom. The seventh day of Pesach is also a yontif because we crossed the sea on the seventh day of Pesach. Crossing the sea is another reason, especially the way we crossed it then, because the sea split. Shavuos, we were healed from all of our infirmities. It says when the Torah was given, everybody was healed from any blemishes they had. The blind could see, the lame could walk, and so on. So there was a healing process at the giving of the Torah. And again, thank the Rabbanu Shalom. That's Shavuos. Now, it's interesting that we really weren't healed completely because everything went back after the sin of the golden calf. When was that healing process completed? On Yom Kippur. So that's one, and that's therefore what's it called when the Torah was re-given. So the healing process was Shavuos until Yom Kippur. Okay. And then we went through the desert. So going through the desert is also a reason to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's Sukkot. So the three Yomim Tovim, but counting the first day of Pesach and the seventh day of Pesach separately, represent the four occasions that a person has to give Hodah, and it also explains why Sukkot comes after Yom Kippur. Because the third occasion where we were, healed, really wasn't completed until after Yom Kippur. Okay. Now, that's just an interesting thought. Now let's go on to this. It says in the Torah that the reason that we dwell in Sukkot is Ki basukos hoshavti es b'nei Yisrael. Hoshavti means I made the Jewish people dwell in Sukkot. I put them into Sukkot. Now there's an argument in the Gemara what exactly those Sukkot refer to. One opinion says they refer to the clouds of glory that surrounded us. And the other one says that we built regular huts, and that's what we lived in, temporary huts that could be put up and taken down and travel with us through the desert. Now, I understand if it refers to the Anoni HaKavod, to the clouds of glory, that God made us dwell in those sukkahs. But if it refers to regular booths, God didn't make us dwell in those booths. We built them on our own. We put ourselves in those booths. God didn't put us in those booths. So what does it mean? How does it fit the wording of the sentence, Ki basukos hoshavti, I put them in these sukkos, if it's not the clouds of glory, if it's regular sukkos? God didn't put us in there, we put ourselves in there. I think that, and also, it says that one of the concepts of sukkos is, in case on Yom Kippur, we were liable to go into exile, the sukkah should serve as that purpose. We're going out of our homes into exile. We should be yotzei with that. Now that seems to be diametrically opposed to the whole idea that the sukkah is the Anoni HaKavod. Sukkahs are the clouds of glory. What kind of exile? How is that exile? And therefore, I want to say the following, and I think it's an interesting idea, and we're going to develop it very, very much. The idea is the following: what is sukkahs? After Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, everybody got their decree, their chelek, their portion in what's going to be for them, for this world, for this year, right, in this world. They're going to be healthy, Rahman al-Islam, not healthy. What are the tools they're going to be given to function in this world? It's finished after Yom Kippur, basically, the judgment is sealed. There's a rule that a person should be happy with his lot. Sameach b'chelko. Sukkos is to celebrate the fact that whatever the lot that God decreed for me, on Yom Kippur, I'm happy with it. I'm sameach b'chelko. Now, what does that mean? Because even if it was decreed that I should go into galus, that's also, God feels that that's what I need. God sometimes provides us with circumstances that appear to us to be positive circumstances, and sometimes he gives us circumstances that appear to us to be negative. ultimately, they're all for our good, because everything is there for our ultimate eternal good, and everything in this world is only temporary. So what we need to reach as a means to reach that eternal good sometimes is what we consider good, and sometimes what appears to us to be bad. Sometimes we need to go into galus, but it's not that God abandons us, but God said, you need that galus. You need to go into galus because of your situation, because of what you created in this world for yourself. This is what's best for your eternal good. You need to go into galus. In fact, the Nitziv says that when we go into galus, we have even greater protection from God than we would have in Eretz Yisrael. Because in Eretz Yisrael, we don't need that extra protection. But being among 70 wolves in galus, we need that extra protection. And therefore, when it says, Kibasukos Hoshavti, it represents both things. After Yom Kippur, we may be going into galus, into a sukkah, of sukkahs mamish, of plain, ordinary huts, or we may be going into the Anone HaKavod, into the clouds of glory, because that's what our lot has been decided for the year. Whichever it is, it's God's Hashkacha. It's not us. This Sukkos HaShavti, if you have to go into that regular hut, it's because I put you in that hut. Because I feel that that's what you need. You need this circumstance. And that's why the Rambam says that the sukkah itself represents the times of trial and tribulation in the desert, and the Esrog and Lulav, the Arba Minim, represent Eretz Yisrael. And we're happy that we got Eretz Yisrael, that we're able to live in Eretz Yisrael, and we remember the bad times, what it was like in the desert, in order to appreciate the good times even more. That's what the Rambam says. But it comes out that on Sukkot, we go to both of them. We remember Golus, what it was like in the desert, outside of Eretz Yisrael, where God put us in that situation because we needed that situation. That was what was best for us in the eternal view of what's best for the Jewish people. And then the Rebbe Shem put us into Eretz Yisrael. And Eretz Yisrael represents the most ideal circumstances a person can have in this world. And Golus represents the most negative circumstances a person can have in this world. But both of them are dictated by God, and both of them ultimately are good. So whatever you're destined to have this year, after Yom Kippur, whether you're going into that sukkah in the desert, or you're going into Eretz Yisrael, realize, be happy with it. Be happy with your lot, because ultimately it's directed by God and it's directed for your good. That is, I think, one of the lessons of Sukkot. And that's why it says that mitztayer, a person who is discomforted by the sukkah, is exempt from the mitzvah. Because the whole idea of sukkah is there shouldn't be any discomfort in this world. Because whatever comes your way, even if it's negative, even if it's discomforting, you should be happy with it, because this is what I need. This is what God deemed. Nothing just happens by itself. God is behind everything that happens. And even if it's something that to me seems discomforting or even worse, but that's what I need for my eternal good, ultimately it's for my good. Ultimately I can be happy with it. So that is the idea. And at night, Sukkot at night, we get the emunah. Lahagid baboker chazdecha ve'emunos chabalelos. We speak God's praises in the daytime, and we get the faith and belief at night. The mitzvah of sukkah is at night, starts at night. The main mitzvah is the first night. There we get the idea that whatever God gives us, even that which is flimsy and gullus, is for our good. And the next day we thank God for all the good things he gives us, right, through the Esrog and Lulav. The Esrog and Lulav represents all the parts of a person's body and all the different kinds of Jews. And we realize that in the totality of everything, everything is for the good. All the different parts, as positive or negative as they may seem, ultimately are for the good. With that, one day I continued this idea on Shabbos Chol HaMoed, where we read Koheles. Shlomo HaMelech in Koheles says, Havel Havolim Omar Koheles, Havel Havolim HaKol Havel. Havel is one Hevel, vanity. Havolim is another two, is three. Havel is four. Havolim is another two, is six, is seven. Right? HaKol Havel is the seventh. Says the Medrash, it corresponds to the 7 days of the week. They are all Hevel, all vain. Now, I can understand till Friday, but Shabbos is also Hevel. So you have to understand what Hevel is. We need two ideas of Hevel. Hevel really means breath, air. Air has no intrinsic value. Its value depends on its function. Therefore, if you breathe in that air, it's life. But if you don't deal with it at all, it's nothing. And not only that, the Gemara says that an open pit, a deep pit, that an animal falls in, what could hurt and damage that animal is not so much the impact, but the bad air, the hevel. So hevel can be life, hevel can be death, hevel can be neutral. It depends on the function. That's this world. This world is a means to reach an end. It's not an end in itself. It has no intrinsic value. Its value is only according to what you do with it. You can use it for the bad, and then it's terrible. You can use it for the good, it's great. And you cannot use it at all, and you waste your time here. So this world is hevel. Even Shabbos. Hevel means it's not intrinsically valuable. Its value is according to its function. That's one idea in hevel. In addition, I wanted to say a different idea in hevel, which I thought the Sfarno says, but it's more me than the Sfarno. The hevel means the following. Hevel is something that has a tremendous potential. It's similar to the first idea, but you don't use it out for that potential. You have a $100 bill. Instead of using it to buy important things, you use it to light a fire as kindling, right? It's a waste. You're taking a piece of paper that could bring you tremendous benefit, and you're using this plain piece of paper. Using it to burn something. So that's called hevel. That's why I think the second child of Adam and Chava was called hevel. Because the first child was called Kayin. Konisi Isha Sashem. I acquired a human being together with God. What a tremendous potential. I brought life into this world. Kayin. So what should the second child been called? Kayin too. Kayin Jr. Right? Another one that I acquired together with God. Why was he called hevel? Because he had the potential to be a Kayin, but he never reached that potential. So he ended up being hevel. So the name was given, basically, almost prophetically, that this child's going to end up hevel. He never was able to reach that potential. So something that has tremendous potential, but you don't use it out for that potential, is hevel. But same idea. There is no intrinsic value to this world. It depends on how you use it. If you use it properly, it is of the utmost importance, right? That's why the sukkah teaches me that lesson. You can't be happy with your lot in this world unless you understand that this world is a means to reach an end. If you think that this world is an end in itself, then if you got the raw end of the deal and you don't have, you're not rich and you're not well and whatever, then how can you be happy? But if you look at all of those things as means to reach an end, and they may be uncomfortable in this world, but they're for your betterment in eternity, then you could be happy with that too. So until you learn the lesson of the sukkah, the lesson of the sukkah is this world is a temporary place. It's not intrinsically valuable. If that's the case, that it's only temporary, then it's beautiful. We decorate the sukkah. The sukkah represents this world and the fact that it's temporary. So what do we decorate it for? Be a miserable place, just make it as drab as possible. No, but if you understand that, then it's only temporary. And it's for the sake of eternity, then it's a beautiful place because everything in this world then can help you reach eternity. So the sukkah is beautiful. And then once you learn that lesson at night, then you take the esrid and lulav, and you take all the parts of your body and all the different things in this world, and all the different people in this world, even the goyim. We bring 70 sacrifices for the goyim on Sukkot. Even they have a part. If you look at this world as temporary, as a means to reach an end, everything is important. Everything can be used in a positive way. And that is the lesson of Koheles. How does Koheles end? Sof davar, the end, bottom line. Hakol nishma es elokim yirav es aras oshmar ki zek kol ha'adam. That's all people are. Torah and mitzvahs. That's the main thing. How you use this world to better that, to promote that. This world is a means. It's not an end. The end is sof davar, is Torah and mitzvahs. This world is a means. That's the end. The means can help you reach that end if you use it properly, even the negative things in this world. Okay. And that's why Sukkot is man simchaseinu. That's when you can be happy. If you don't have that philosophy, then you can't be happy. And that's why 7 days we sit in the sukkah, because you need this lesson a full 7 days. The Esrog and Lulav from the Torah is only the first day. It's only 7 days in the Beis HaMikdash. We do it 7 days now to remember the Beis HaMikdash, rabbinically. But from the Torah, only the first day do you take Esrog and Lulav, and the 7 days not. And in the Beis HaMikdash, 7 days. Because to actually bring this lesson to fruition and really feel happy with everything, one day we can do it. In the Beis HaMikdash, you can do it 7. But to get the philosophy, the right outlook, that all 7 days you can be getting that right outlook and use it properly as you go along. And I was thinking, that's what Shabbos Chol HaMoed is special. It has all these ingredients in it. Shabbos teaches me that the main thing is the world to come, because Shabbos is like the world to come. Moed teaches me that everything that happened, Moed is a yontif. Moed tells me that God directs the world. Shabbos tells me God created the world, and he created for a purpose. The ultimate purpose is the world to come. Every yontif tells me that God didn't abandon the world. He's involved in everything that happens in the world and directs it. Pesach, Shavuos, everything is God's guidance. Hashgachas Hashem. So if I believe that this world is really just a means to reach that Olam Haba of Shabbos, and I believe that God guides everything in the world in order to reach that goal, then even the chol, even the mundane things in this world get importance, because they're all tools and means to be able to reach eternity. And with this idea, I was thinking two things that apply to current events. One is that, from what I said before, that the sukkah can represent both the anonei hakavod, right, the ideal circumstances that a person could have, and at the same time, galus, negative circumstances. Same thing can represent something positive and something negative, and it's no contradiction. Because the Gemara says that Rabbi Akiva once turned a corner, and there was the wife of Turnus Rufus. She was a beautiful woman. A Goya, she was the wife of Turnus Rufus HaRosha. And she was a beautiful woman, an idol worshiper. And Rabbi Akiva, when he saw her, did 3 things at the same time. He laughed, he cried, and he spit. Spit. The Gemara says why. He said he cried because such beauty was one day going to be in the grave. He spit because she was an idol worshiper, and she represented evil. And he laughed because he saw prophetically that one day she was going to convert and he was going to marry her. What do you see from that Gemara? That a person can have conflicting emotions at the same time. You can look at one thing and see it from 3 different vantage points, laugh, cry, and spit. There's no contradiction. How did I apply that to current events? Gilad Shalit. On the one hand, tremendous simcha. Now I see that they're taking, dismantling that thing that was there for 5 years or, you know, outside the, on the way here, every time I pass there, you had to feel that, you know, here are people, whether they have parents or whatever. What a simcha. They came back on Sukkot, you know, Zman says something. You have to be happy for the family, for Klal Yisrael, that he's back. At the same time, you have to be terribly sad, to put it mildly, that they let out, not just because of the danger that's going to be, but more than that, the injustice. Here's this woman who what's it called, the mastermind of the Sabaro, the people there who's lost their entire family, right, went meshuga in the Supreme Court, and they vowed they're going to take revenge. I don't blame them. I mean, I can't. How can you not feel their pain? Does that mean they shouldn't have released Gilad Shalit? No, but you can have conflicting feelings, and there's no contradiction. You can be happy for him, happy for his family, happy for us, that Baruch Hashem, the world sees that one Jew is worth 1,000 of them, and more. But the heart-rending feeling of pain that these murderers got out. They took other people's lives, and they got out, and they're going to have a life. This woman, right? She already on Shabbos had a news thing saying that even though she signed that she's giving up terror, she didn't mean anything, and thus she doesn't have to keep to her word, and she's going to continue trying to kill Jews. So in any case, if I was the Rosh HaMemshalah here or whatever, so I would target these people, keep my eye on them, and as soon as they stepped out of line, finish them off. Right? And they can do it. Right, and one by one, they'll take the 1,000 and get rid of them, instead of having to support them in prison. That's what they really should do. They kind of, they're still going to capture soldiers, or looking now to get more, so we'll do the same thing with them. Right. In any case, but that's one thing. Then there's a second thing, and that has to do with current events. This idea also lends itself to understanding what the main thing in this world is and what the secondary things are. What is the means and what's the end? What's the goal and what's the means to reach that goal? And people who lose sight of that and make the means the end and the end the means wreak havoc in this world. Okay. It is proper to protest if dairy products are too expensive. People can't afford them, and especially poor people or whatever, and these are staples, especially for children, whatever, milk, whatever, cottage cheese, right? Nothing wrong with protesting that and trying to bring the prices down. But to make that the ikker and to destroy the economy of Israel, the dairy economy, in order to do that, is that worth it? What's the ikker? What's the tafel? Are you making a hole in the boat and sinking everybody together, right? For what purpose? So there's a way to do things, a way not. The same thing with the doctors, right? These interns, right? You became a doctor for what? To make money? If you became a doctor to make money, you shouldn't be a doctor. That's not the reason to be a doctor. Do something else. It's the same thing as people learning Torah. In one place, the Rambam says that somebody who learns Torah and is supported by the community is holy of holies. Another place, the Rambam says, anybody who thinks he's going to learn Torah and be supported by the community loses his share in the world to come, and he desecrates God's name, and he's doing a terrible thing. So which is it? The answer is, one answer is, it depends what your main focus is. A person who says, look, I want to dedicate myself to Torah, to serving God, to disseminating Torah, right? But if I don't work and eat, it's going to be short-lived because I'll die of starvation within a few days. So if I want to devote my entire powers, time, efforts to Torah and to disseminating Torah, I'm going to have to be supported by somebody. So I'm going to be forced to be supported by the tzibur who benefits from me. That's 100% okay. That's Kodesh Kadosh. But somebody who says, look, I got to make a living. Look, I could be a plumber, but I don't have water. I could be a doctor, I can't stand the sight of blood. Right? I could be a businessman, but I can't add and subtract. So, I guess I'll sit and learn and get paid for it, That's the way I'll earn money. That's the way I'll make a living. That's a Chilul Hashem. Because then the main thing becomes the money, and the Torah becomes a means how to earn money. That's Chilul Hashem. Where the main thing is Torah, and the means to be able to have the Torah is the money, that's fine. Very big, thin difference. Very, very hairline difference between where the money is the Iker and the Torah is the means, or the Torah is the Iker and the money is the means. Same thing goes with a doctor. A person who says, look, I want to dedicate my life to helping people, to curing the sick, that's the Hippocratic oath that he takes, right? But it's not an easy life, and it's not an easy job, so I want to get paid for it, right? Because otherwise I'm not going to be able to really dedicate myself properly because the strain of such a job is too much. So fine, so the Iker is the medicine, and the Tofel, the means, is the money. But somebody who the means becomes the main thing, and the medicine becomes secondary, how do you know then? What would you do if the money's not there and you still have to help people? Would you quit because the money's not there? Would you refuse to come in and help sick people? Then obviously, in your mind, the helping the sick is not the main thing. The main thing is the money. Then better you shouldn't be a doctor. Then better you should be a plumber. Do something else. Not doctor. So people lose sight of the main thing, the means and the end. They wreak havoc in this world. And lastly, all of these lessons we learn with the sukkah, with the lulav, but when it comes to Shmini Atzeres, we want to learn the lesson in such a way that when we give up the sukkah and give up the lulav, the lessons don't go away. When they depend on things, then the lesson is short-lived. You can't be in a sukkah your whole life. You can't have an esrog and lulav your whole life. So it's the Shmini Atzeres is like, it says a few different things. It says, God says, it's hard for me to say goodbye. So let's have one more day, just the two of us together, right? The whole sukkah, you brought sacrifices to the whole world, big amounts of sacrifice. Today, just one little sacrifice, a little meal just between the two of us. That's one idea. Another idea says that there's a medrash that says when you have a guest, the first day you give the guest steak. Second day, you give him lamb chops. Third day, you give him hamburgers. Fourth day, you give him parve schnitzel. Fifth day, you give him rice, right? And so on. Now, what does that mean? You want to get rid of the guest? Who treats a guest like that? Well, the idea is the following. When you have a guest and you want to have a relationship with that person, you want to get close to the person. So you don't know the person yet. There's nothing to build the relationship. You need external things. You need a steak to make you feel that we have a connection, that I enjoy your company. By the second day, we already have a rapport. We already have a connection. We don't need the steak anymore to bring us together. Lamb chops, enough. By the last day, we don't even need the food. There's a connection between us that doesn't need to be created with artificial things. That's the idea. We needed the sukkah, the lulav, the 7 days of sukkahs. But on the eighth day, God says, it's hard to say goodbye. And if I leave you now, then it's going to be goodbye because you don't have the sukkah, you don't have the lulav. Let's create the relationship where it won't be broken because you don't have the sukkah and the lulav. We'll create the relationship on Torah. That's Simchas Torah. Simchas Torah is where the Torah itself teaches me this lesson. That's the main thing. That's my focus in life. That's what I dance around, the Torah in the middle. I'm dancing with the Torah, around the Torah. That's the main thing in this world. And everything else is just a means to reach that end. And if you understand that, then you don't have to say goodbye. Then everything that happens during the year, you have the same simcha that you had on Sukkot. Except on Sukkot, you needed the artificial externals, the sukkah and the lulav, to create that. And after Sukkot, you don't need that because you had a day of Simchas Torah where the Torah already became the connection. You have that connection with God without depending on artificial things like a lulav and a sukkah. The relationship now is there intrinsically, therefore there's no saying goodbye. whole week. We're concerned with the external, with the world, whatever. Now it's just between us and the Rebbe Shalom. What is the goal? What is exactly? And that's why Simchas Torah, Shmini Atzeres, is an echo of the world to come, because that represents what the goal is. This relationship with God that's created in this world, but the main thing is what's going to be eternally. So that is that in a nutshell is what I spoke about over Sukkot. And the truth is, I didn't have time to really prepare drushes, so I said more down-to-earth things. Somebody came over to me and says, the other drushes usually give are so philosophical, I don't understand what word you're talking about. He said, this year I really understood what you were talking about.
Oh boy.
So I decided maybe it's not worth my time to go into all these intricate philosophical drushes and just speak a little bit down-to-earth. As I get older, I begin to think that maybe that is more valuable than all of the intricate involved drushes I gave in the past. So because it was, I think, a little down-to-earth, and it brings out ideas that are important throughout the year, therefore I gave myself the liberty of discussing Sukkot with you a year early. But you are the first people to have Sukkot discussed with you for the coming year. Yes? The what? Oh, no, because in Chutz Laaretz, the eighth day may be the seventh day. We don't sit in the eighth day, there's no Sukkot. But in outside of Eretz Yisrael, every day is a doubt whether the first day is Sukkot or no. The first day is Erev Sukkot and the second day is Sukkot. Then the third day may be the second day, it may be the third day. The fourth day, the eighth day may be the seventh day. So if that's the case, then ask me a good question. Then why don't we take Hoshanas in Chutz Laaretz on the eighth day? Maybe it's the seventh day, right? We do sit in the Sukkah, but we don't take Hoshanas. The answer is, it really is the eighth day. We know today that it's the eighth day, even in Chutz Laaretz. It used to be a doubt, way back when they sent messengers to tell. But we have a calendar, we know exactly when it is. So why do we keep 2 days in Chutz Laaretz now? We know. The answer is, because of Minig. The Minig remain, because someday it could go back that we won't know, and then you have to keep 2 days. So, the 2 days, because the only place they knew for sure which day Rosh Chodesh was in Eretz Yisrael, where they could send messengers by the 15th day, and everybody knew which day was Rosh Chodesh could be the 30th day from the previous month or the 31st day. A month could have 30 days or 29 days. If it has 29 days, the 30th day is the first of the next month. If it has 30 days, and it doesn't go by a regular cycle, it goes when they see the moon. So witnesses would come. If they came on the 30th day, that day was Rosh Chodesh. If they didn't come the 30th day, automatically the next day was Rosh Chodesh. If the first day was Rosh Chodesh, that means 15 days later was Sukkot. If the second day was Rosh Chodesh, that means 15 days after that was Sukkot. So 15 days after the first possibility, when you were in Chutz Laaretz, you didn't know, you had to keep as Yom Tov. Maybe it's Yom Tov today. Second day, maybe yesterday the witnesses didn't come 15 days early, they came the next day. So the next day is. So when it was a real doubt, if somebody came to Eretz Yisrael, well, they knew when it was, because they were told, right, so then they only kept 1 day. But now it's not a real doubt. In Chutz Laaretz, they know for sure when Sukkot is or whatever. So why do they keep 2 days? Because of the minig. Since it's only a minig, we don't want to do something on the eighth day, which is Yom Tov, that appears that it's not Yom Tov. If we start taking Hoshanas and Esrog and Lulav, it'll be clear it's not a Yom Tov. So we don't do that. But sitting in the Sukkah, first of all, we don't make a brach on the Sukkah. Okay? And sitting in the Sukkah, people sometimes sit in their Sukkah. I know people who passel their Sukkah, and they sit outside the Sukkah and after Sukkahs. It's nice, comfortable out there. So that doesn't look so bad that it's for sure not Yom Tov because you're sitting in the Sukkah. So that we do. But do things that would make it clear that it's not a Yom Tov that we don't do. So in Chutz Laaretz. And that's why people who come here from Chutz Laaretz have to keep 2 days, according to most opinions. Why? L'chora, here they know which day is, right? But it's a minig. It's no longer because it's a doubt. If it would be a real doubt, they came here, they know it would never be a doubt. But it's not because of the doubt, it's because of a minig. So the minig, the halacha by a minig is, that if you have a minig in a place and you go to another place where they don't have that minig, you have to keep your minig if you intend to go back. So that's the people come here, intend to go back to Chutz La'aretz, have to keep their minig here because they have to keep the more strict minig of either place. The strictness of where you are and the strictness of where you're going back to.
What if one goes to Chutz La'aretz?
Oh, so somebody goes to Chutz La'aretz, same thing. You have to keep the chumras of the place where you are. Therefore, because it shouldn't be machlokas, even though you're coming back, but you have to keep the strictness of where you are also. So therefore, really for you it's not yontif. But you have to act as if it's yontif, not to let people there think that you're mimachal yontif. So therefore, even privately, you have to keep yontif, because anything that's because of marasayin, even privately, you have to do. Except there are opinions that things that even a person who lives there could do, like, in a permissible way. For instance, a Shabbos clock. You could have lights turned on and off with a Shabbos clock. So nobody knows that you're turning lights on and off. They could assume they have a Shabbos clock. Those kind of things, it's possible that you'd be allowed to do privately. Because nobody will know you're doing malacha, because if they see the lights going on and off, they could say it's a Shabbos clock doing it. Right? And that's not according to everybody. Yeah, so because they hold, there's a Chacham Tzvi that says that since originally, when there really was a doubt, if somebody were to come here for Yontif, and they have no doubt, he would only keep one day. Because even though now it's a minig, the minig is based on what was when it was a real doubt. It can't be worse than when it was a real doubt, and when it was a real doubt, you would only have to keep one day, so only keep one day now. Most poskim argue on that, the Shulchan Aruch argues on that, says not like that, and says that a person from Chutz La'aretz who comes to Eretz Yisrael has to keep 2 days. Regular 2 days is there. When you go from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz, you also have to keep 2 days, but only the Chumrah. Meaning, on the last day of Yontif, a man has to put on tefillin. Because for him it's not really Yontif. Because he puts on tefillin privately, he has to go to shul, dress up for Yontif, pretend he's keeping Yontif, and not do any malacha. But he has to put it on tefillin, because that's a chumrah too.
No.
You have to put it on privately in his house.
Right.
That you have to do. And then you go to shul, and you daven a weekday Shmoneh Esrei while they're davening for Yontif, but you make it look like you're davening for Yontif. You have to, publicly, you have to appear to Yontif. Malacha you can't even do privately. And privately, you have to do those things that are a chumrah for you, like putting on tefillin or whatever. You have to make Havdalah, what's it called, privately or whatever.
I also thought if a person
comes to that's another opinion. Right. Somebody who owns an apartment here or a house and comes here every Sholosh Regalim, right, could be that for Sholosh Regalim he's considered an Israeli. And for the rest of the year he's considered a person of Chutz La'aretz. So he's not a Chutz La'aretz person who has to be visiting here. He's an Eretz Yisrael person when he's here, and he's a Chutz La'aretz person when he's there, because he is kavua here for certain times of the year. That could be. Not everybody holds to that. It has to be. Yeah, that's for sure. You can't just come here and temporarily be. You have to own something here, and you own a house there, and then it could be that you're dividing your time. You live in two places. But if you only come here as a tourist, even if you come 3 times a year, right, your main place is where you live and have a house. Right, here you're just temporary, that pretty much is not the same thing.
What happens with
Yisker? With what? Yisker, when you're there, so you can say Yisker any day of the year you want. There you should say it privately. You can say Yisker privately on your Yontif, right? And the next day go to shul and say Yisker again. Yeah. Or, if you don't want to say it privately, you're Yotze by saying it the second day too. Right, even though it's for you it's not really Yontif, but you can say Yisker that day too. That's also, since taking a shower, there are permissible ways to take a shower on Yontif. If you take it the permissible way, for sure it's okay. Because some people hold a minig not to take a shower on Yontif, even the permissible way. That you can do in Chutz La'aretz. But if it's in a non-permissible way, there's a shaila, better not to. Because, again, there, nobody knows, you know, if you're taking the permissible way or not. You could take a permissible way. So that's like the Shabbos clock light. Not everybody holds of that. There is such a heter, though, to do such a thing. Yeah.
Moves
to Chutz Laaretz, then he becomes Chutz Laaretz 100%, that's where he lives. If he intends to move there, he doesn't get that status until he actually moves there. Same thing, somebody who's intending to move to Eretz Israel doesn't keep one day until he moves here. No, not the system. You have to make up your mind that you are there kavua. That is your place. If you made up your mind like that, right, they said that what's it called? Somebody once asked Rav Kook, I think it was Rav Kook. If somebody has das to go back to Chutz La'aretz, what's it called? You know, he's here, but his das is to go back, right? So what is his halacha? Rav Kook said, what kind of das is that? To go back to Chutz La'aretz. But in any case, okay, next week in Mirat Hashem we will start the next Mishnah, fourth Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Mirat Hashem.